Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you so much for joining me here once again today for episode number 441. In just a moment, I'll be sharing a conversation I had with three guests. I think this is the first time I've ever had three guests on the podcast. So today I'm being joined by Diane Button, who's been on the podcast before, Gabrielle Elise Jimenez, who's also been a guest before, and Angela Shook. And these three are going to be talking about their new book, The Doula Toolkit. I think you'll really enjoy this conversation. So hang on for just a minute or so longer, and we'll get to that. But first, I want to thank my newest supporter on Patreon, Jan Booth. Thank you, Jan, for joining the Patreon community. And also thank you to Linda Reed, who increased your pledge. I appreciate that as well. And I wanted to let you know my page at patreon.com/EOLU is becoming a real community, and everyone who has joined it is now able to take advantage of some new bonuses I've created. I've started doing a What to Watch episode once a month where I share with you some of the really interesting content on television networks and streaming channels having to do with death, dying, grief, or the afterlife, so that we can all join in together and support the makers who are creating this kind of content and putting it out there, because we want more of this type of programming to be available, and they need an audience for it in order to be convinced that that's the right thing to do. Another new bonus, you'll see the first episode today of this new bonus, which is behind the scenes, where I record a little extra content with my guests that I can share with my Patreon community. And then the monthly bonus that I've been doing for a few years now is the end of life news update, where I share with you what's happening in the news around end of life issues. So you can go to patreon.com/EOLU. If you'd like to become part of the community and take advantage of those bonuses, and thanks in advance to all of you who are doing that. I also want to let you know that I've created some gift guides. I know that I'm a little behind the times. These would have been really helpful before Christmas, but I was busy being a grandmother at that time, so I didn't get them finished. But we give gifts to people all year long. So Valentine's Day is coming up. We also have Easter, Mother's Day, Father's Day, and birthdays that will be happening throughout the year. So these are gift guides for caregivers, for people who are receiving care, and also people who are grieving, and certain special gifts that may be appropriate or relevant to the situation that they're in. And you can go to the EOLUpodcast.com website, and you'll find a link there for gift guides. And you can take a look at the ideas I've come up with for some appropriate and helpful gifts for people in those situations. And I hope you'll find that useful. So we'll move on now with my conversation with Gabby, Angela, and Diane. And as always, I'll come back afterwards with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm so excited to welcome three guests to the podcast. I think this is the first time I've ever had three people on at once, but there's a very special reason why I have three guests. I'm welcoming Gabby Elise Jimenez, Angela Shook, and Diane Button. I'm going to tell you a little bit about each of them, though Gabby and Diane have both been on the podcast before, and Angela is my new friend. And so Gabby, for those of you who may not remember her, is a hospice nurse, end-of-life doula, death and dying educator, author, and blogger. Her Facebook community, The Hospice Heart, has become a safe place to have a conversation about death, dying, and grief, and now has, amazingly, 140,000 followers, which Gabby refers to as the most compassionate and kindest humans. Her goal is to help improve the way human beings are cared for when they are dying, and that the care comes from a heart-centered place. And you can learn more about Gabby at her website, which is thehospiceheart.net, and her Facebook page is the same thing. So hi, Gabby.
Hi, thanks for having us today.
Yeah, I'm so excited to welcome all of you. And then along with Gabby is Angela Shook. Angela is the owner of Dragonfly End of Life Services. She is also an end of life doula, hospice volunteer, ordained minister, and the past president of the National End of Life Doula Alliance, NIDA. She's a veterinary doula with Petwell Mobile Vet, where she assists with euthanasia and the end of life care and support of companion animals. She's also a level two Reiki practitioner and has completed the animal Reiki course through the Animal Hospice Group. And you can find out more about Angela at her website, angelashook.com. So hi, Angela, welcome. And it's so nice to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you. I'm so thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And then third is Diane Button, who I spoke with, I think it's been a couple of years ago. Diane is a founding partner of the Bay Area End of Life Doula Alliance in Northern California and an instructor for the University of Vermont Larner College of Medicine End of Life Doula Professional Certificate Program. That is a mouthful. She is also the author of Dear Death, Finding Meaning in Life, Peace in Death, and Joy in an Ordinary Day. And we talked about that book on our previous conversation. And she shares insights she gathered from research she did for her master's degree and from working with hospice and doula clients over the past decade. And Diane's website is dianebutton.com. And on Instagram and Facebook, she's at Dear Death Doula. So Diane, welcome back. Good to see you again.
Thanks, Karen. Nice to be here.
Well, the reason that all three of you are here at once is that you have collaborated together and created a new book, The Doula Toolkit. And I'm so excited to talk about that with the three of you and ask you about it. Oh, good. For those on video, Gabby's holding it up for us to see. There it is. And we're going to get into that in a minute, but I thought first I would just ask each one of you to briefly share about how you ended up doing this line of work. And Angela, I'll start with you since you're new to all of us, and tell us how you got started doing all the work you're doing, a doula, but also a doula for our animal companions.
Yeah, well, thank you. So not only am I the newbie to this podcast, I'm a little bit of the newer one to end of life services within our little team of three. I came into end of life care about 6 years ago as a hospice volunteer, and really enjoyed that. But it wasn't until the end of life and the death of a family member where I really saw the impact of hospice care and end of life care. And not only that beautiful impact that he received or that it had on his end of life, but how that care and support affected my family as well. And I just found that I was really touched by that and didn't know that there could be such grace and healing at end of life, and really just dove into the work. I left my career as a fund developer for children's hospitals and just dived right into hospice work. I took every training I could find. I loved falling in love with the end of life services. And there were so many opportunities. I didn't realize there was such great educational opportunities out there. So I took several trainings with UVM and Inelda and so many workshops and webinars and read all the books and dedicated as much time as I could to hospice volunteering. After joining hospice full-time, I fell in with NIDA and eventually served as their president and was so thankful for the network of supportive doulas that I met there, including Diane. I think without that kind of mentorship and community that I found there, it just gave me the confidence to keep going and to just really fall into this work. After a few years of working as an end-of-life doula and working with hospice, I had the chance to take the companion animal doula course at UVM. And I really only took that, to add to my existing toolkit as a doula. But also personally, I had an elderly dog that I knew my time with her was coming to an end, and I really wanted to give her the best support and care possible, and also kind of prepare myself for her loss. She had been part of my life for 16 years. And going through that program not only helped me give her that really great end of life, it awoke this passion in me to help other animals. So I was fortunate about 2 years ago to start partnering with a local mobile vet that you mentioned in your introduction. And that has just been such an amazing experience to share the skills that I've learned to companion and support humans at end of life, to also support companion animals, pets, and the ones that love them too. So through that, I gosh, I think in the last 2 years, I've been a part of nearly 300 euthanasia appointments. And offering grief support to those clients and patients, and just recently started doing some grief support workshops for pet loss. So it's been a little bit of a twisty and interesting journey to come from hospice and then be a doula and then also now incorporating animal care. But I'm really grateful to have had the training and the learning I've had, and having the community that I found online and through Nida and with other doulas like Diane and Gabby really makes this work even more joyful.
Well, it's so great. Thank you for sharing that. I just love hearing people's stories because the ways we come to this work are always so unique for every person. You know, you get the calling to be here and you know it's the right place to be, but then you just never know what will open up for you and what you'll end up doing. And I just want to say, I would bet veterinarians are thrilled to have people like you at their side to help when they perform euthanasia. At least I would think so.
I think so. I know with my experience, it's been really beautiful to not only help the animals and their families, but also to be able to support the veterinarian as well. There's such compassion fatigue that goes into this work, and to be able to offer the veterinary team support as well has been a really lovely experience.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. Well, and maybe just hearing your story might inspire some other doulas to do extra training in this area too.
I hope so.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Angela. Well, Diane, I'd love to hear your story again a little bit and how you ended up doing this work.
Sure. I get so mesmerized listening to Angela's story, though. It's so great. And just I took the same class she did at the UVM, the animal companion class. And it really is so amazing that we can actually do this work with our animals and the people who have pets. And we can just to be able to bring that amount of like love and support with our animals. It's just like become such a beautiful part of the work we do. So I'm so grateful that we get to do that. So for me personally, my journey started when my grandfather died. It was a long time ago, 30 years ago. And he died with a giant smile on his face. And I am pretty sure that I've spent most of my adult life trying to figure out why he had such a big smile on his face, because it was like literally the biggest smile he ever had on his face. And I just felt like I missed out. I didn't ask him enough questions. He was a very humble man. He was a plastic surgeon who treated burn victims. And so I knew that he had witnessed a lot of excruciating pain and suffering. And he was always very calm, very gentle, very loving, not very verbally demonstrative, but I'd never really seen him smile like that. And so I think my work with dying started really about living. Like, what do I want to do differently in my life so that I can have a big smile on my face on the day that I die? And so that was kind of like a mission for me. So I went back and got my master's in counseling just to study existential psychology so that I could understand like the meaning of life type stuff. And that led me to interviewing people 75 and older, like what matters, what's important, what are you carrying with you as you go into your final years, what's bringing you joy. And that led to volunteering at hospice, which is a great place for any new doula to start out. And then I ended up, once I started discovering that there are end-of-life doulas that are able to spend good amounts of time with their clients or show up in the middle of the night or meet needs all over the place, that really appealed to me. So like Angela, I took the ENELDA training and I took the UVM training, and I just started working with a group here in the San Francisco Bay Area. There's four of us and several other doulas as well who we reach out to as our practice starts growing and we need support. So it's turned out to be really amazing.
That's really a wonderful story. And now I will never forget that question of what will it take for me to die with a smile on my face? I love that your introduction to death, it was a mystery, but kind of a happy mystery, you know, and knowing that something about this process is not so terrible or scary if he's dying with a big smile on his face. I love that.
Yeah, thanks. It taught me a lot about our clients because really that whole idea of that you're fully living until the day you die, how do we make that happen? You know, that really is part of that's the heart of the ingredient about, you know, living well all the way through to the end.
Yeah, so beautiful. Well, now I see how the three of you fit together so well. I feel the resonance between you. And Gabby, I know you, but share your story with our audience as well. And this just all feels like a perfect fit when I have the three of you here together, like your energy, your stories, everything. So tell us your story, Gabby.
Well, I'll give you the short version. I love sitting here and listening to Angela and Diane. I like them so much. And this relationship is really lovely. So I love to hear their start and what they've done. And it just makes my heart smile. So I was working in commercial real estate. I was doing kind of the corporate job with the suit and the fancy heels. And, I liked that. I also made a lot more money. And I was in between jobs and I was asked to sit with a friend of mine who was dying because his wife needed to work. Now, prior to this, I had witnessed a lot of death, but not having the skills or tools to know what it means to be present. I never sat at the bedside of my parents or my sister. I never held their hand or said last words. I sat up against a wall waiting for it to happen. And so when she asked me to sit with him, I didn't know what that meant. And so I stayed with him for about 2 weeks and I fed him, I bathed him, I slept in the twin bed next to his twin bed so that I could be there when he'd wake up or be afraid or scared or in pain or whatever he was experiencing. And I watched as the hospice team came in and out and the care that they provided was so compassionate. And I felt drawn to that. So I went to the adult program in my town after he died, and I became a caregiver. I had to move out of my house because I couldn't afford rent. I wasn't making any money anymore. I rented a little room and I went to be a caregiver and I took care of the elderly. And while I was taking care of the elderly, I realized that what happens when you age is people treat you like you're old. And they don't explain things like why maybe they're stopping certain medications or why their body is making such changes or how to care for someone who's going through that. I felt like they were almost kind of kicked to the curb. You know, they didn't get the care that they deserved. So I decided at the age of 47 to go to school to become a nurse, a hospice nurse specifically, because I wanted to change or at least improve the way people were cared for at the end of their life. And during that training, one of my people that I was caring for died. And I remember his daughter called me and said, Gabby, you know, he's about ready to die. We think he's going to die soon. And I said, okay. And I, you know, here I am going through hospice nurse training. You know, I think that I'm kind of all that, which clearly I wasn't at the time, but I remember walking in the room and he was lying in his hospital bed and his hand, he's a big Italian man, his big chubby fingers were hanging over the edge. And I took his hand and I gently put it over on his chest and I just held it for a minute. And for the first time, I understood what that meant. Mm-hmm. And I just sat with him until he took his last breath. And I watched that last breath and I thought, I think this is what I'm supposed to do. So I knew this was what I was supposed to do. So I finished nursing school. I became a hospice nurse. I worked in hospice nursing. But if you're a hospice nurse, you have a time frame. You can visit your patient, then you have to leave and go and see your next patient. And it's very much sort of a an assembly line, right? And there's so many protocols. But after you witness as many deaths as I have, I kept thinking, why can't I stay longer? Why can't I be available to them? Why can't I offer more? So I decided to become an end-of-life doula because we have the luxury of time. And we also have the knowledge, not that hospice nurses or hospice teams don't, but more so as a doula, what it truly means to be present and how important that is. And so I became a doula to provide a deeper level of care for people who were dying, but also support those who were grieving. And it was in that process where I realized that I wanted to educate people to do this work, because I think it's one thing to get to become a hospice nurse or to become an end-of-life doula or to work in this field at all. But to do that, to be present at the bedside, I think you have to know what that means. And so what I started doing was taking my tools and the things that I have learned and writing a blog about it and creating the Facebook page and books, because at the end of the day, what I want is to make sure that that person who's taking their last breath feels heard, seen, cared for well, and hopefully has a smile on their face like Diane's grandpa, because maybe he did get to live his best life or feel great love or know deep, passionate care. And so my work is a combination of bedside and education, and I love both equally.
Oh, I love that so much. And I also love hearing stories that sometimes we get into this work as a second career in the second half of our life, that maybe we had no idea that we were headed in this direction when we started out at a younger age. And then even that as we fulfill our calling and do this work, we are also part of the calling for other people, because I was thinking of your stories of seeing a hospice team come in to care for someone that you loved, how inspiring that could be, and seeing a doula doing work with a patient, that who knows how many people are being inspired just by the three of you each doing your own work, who are now going to be following in your footsteps.
There's sometimes when I'll write a story about a patient, right? And I'll put it on my Facebook page, and I'll read all the comments, which are always lovely. But I especially like the ones that say, I could do this work, or I'd really like to do this work, or how do I get to do this work? And I think that you're right. I think the three of us collectively are inspiring others to do this work well. And we have chosen not to hoard our tools, right? We share them freely way before this book. But yeah, I think it's about kind of handing it over so the next group of people can do this work with a little more tools and a little more education.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And now that the three of you have come together to write this book, like initially when I heard, oh, three people got together to write a book, I was thinking, well, you must have like lived in the same area, or, you know, I'm just curious about how did you get together, because you're all in different places in different parts of the country. And like, tell me how this whole thing happened.
Well, you know, when during COVID times, we were always on Zoom calls as doulas. And so we did get to know each other all around the country, even around the world. That was really one fantastic thing, was that we got to know each other. But then I was on a board, the NIDA board, with Angela. So I met Angela. That was in 2019 or so, maybe even before. And then I met Angela in person post-COVID in 2022, at the end of 2022. And then in 2023, Gabby and I were at the MAID conference up in Oregon, and we met. So when the world started kind of coming back, we were starting to meet in person, because we'd kind of developed these friendships during COVID. And I always knew that Gabby and Angela were very similar types of people. And we kind of, one thing that I think we do well in our doula world is we like like Gabby said, we're not hoarding our stuff, and we like to get to know each other, and we like to share our resources because we want to elevate doulas. We want doulas to be, you know, well-informed and well-trained and to have the tools that they need to go out and do their work. And oh, I've really admired that about Gabby and Angela all along. So we got on a call one day and we were just chatting, just getting to know each other. And we were talking about all the calls we get every week. I want to be a doula. What do? Can I shadow you? Can you be my mentor? Do you have a contract or an agreement? Do you have a vigil plan? Can you help me with some legacy ideas? You know, it's constant. And this was happening with all of us. So we talked about kind of combining our knowledge and maybe putting together some forms and some templates, thinking in my mind anyway, when we first had this conversation, that it might be 30 pages or 40 pages of forms and such. And then we just got going and it just kept growing and growing. And like once we started realizing, you know, that with our combined years of experience and our different areas that we really focus in, we'd really covered a lot of territory and it grew. I think now it's just almost 200 pages of what we all put together and published with the Doula Toolkit. So that's how it happened.
Wow. It seems like in a way, like it was meant to be, you know, the connections that you made with each other, but that this was a book that needed to come about because I can also imagine that there are a lot of doulas who take trainings and when the training's over, kind of sit at home thinking, what do I do next? Where do I go? Where do I go next? How do I actually get started doing this work? And have you found that to be true, Gabby, that there are people who just feel a little bit lost and don't know where to begin?
Absolutely. And I think there's also a little bit of a misconception. I think people romanticize the idea of becoming an end-of-life doula. So they take a course, they get a piece of paper that says that they've passed this course, and they call themselves a doula, which they can. But then what? And they don't know what that means. And I mean, unless you've been in this field, if you've even as a hospice volunteer, who I think are already doulas, if you haven't done that, then how are you going to sit at a bedside? How are you going to offer support? So absolutely, you know, one of the things that we talked about in our first meeting was just how many people don't know what to do after they've taken a program. You know, they don't know what to do. They don't know how to have conversations or get them started or how to help someone or choreograph, like we were talking earlier. And so, yes, we see that a lot. And that's kind of how this whole thing came about was, like Diane said, I mean, we were just going to throw something together, you know, and it just took on a life of its own.
Yeah, that's really amazing. And so I'm just curious about, did you use like Google Docs or Dropbox, or how did you all coordinate three different people writing different parts of a book? How did you physically do that?
Well, the funny thing is that I think it was Angela who wanted to do the Google Doc thing, but I didn't know how to do it. And I think Diane didn't either. And Angela's so computer savvy. She's like, well, we could do this and this spreadsheet and this thing. And Diane and I are like, no. This is not going to work. So most of our communication was over email and text. And we would say, hey, what do you think of this idea? Oh, that's a great idea. And you know, when you get three people, pretty much strangers, who have their own agenda and life and work going on, right? Their own plan on how they like things to be. It's very much like being a chef, right? And going into someone else's kitchen and messing up their knives or their cooking area, right? They look at you like, hey, excuse me, this is my area. Well, I think that could have happened. We could have gotten on each other's nerves. We could have stepped on each other's toes. We could have said, no, back off, that's my area. But that never happened. We would share an idea and someone would say, oh, great. You know, I could do this part. And we're like, yeah, and I could do this part. And we would start building on whatever the other shared. And we worked so well together. I remember there was a time we had this beautiful cover. And if you look at the cover, it's a mandala. And the mandala is a mandala that my granddaughters made. So it's very, I love that they both said, yes, let's use that. Well, the rest of the book was plain paper, right? And it was filled with great stuff, but it wasn't beautiful. So I said, okay, you guys, and I was kind of nervous, right? And I said, I just want you to hear me out here. What if we added more color and made it a little more colorful, which would ended up costing more, and you know, there was some financial stuff to think about, but also would it work with this book? And they never once made me feel like I was asking for too much. They said, well, let's see what it is. Let's see if we can do this. And then Diane, who was kind of in charge of really putting it together, she's like, this looks good. And then that just enhanced us. So then all of our, like, there's a whole section on rituals, right? All of our ritual pictures are in color and they look so beautiful. And anytime someone had an idea, the other two would join in and say, yes, that's great. But the best part that came out of it, at least for me, I'll let the other two share their thoughts, but was how much for me was how much I learned from the two of them. I will be a better doula because of what I learned from them.
Yeah, Diane did such a great job, like Abby said, of really was kind of the ringleader of this project and had the vision of what it could look like and what it could be. And then we each took the lead on a couple of chapters, depending on where our skill sets and our passions and our experiences were. But the great thing is it didn't just stop there. It's not like this is my chapter, or that's their chapter. Every way through, it was very much woven in each other's thoughts and words and feelings and experiences. And, you know, Gabby did such beautiful work with rituals and ceremony. And I was invited in to share one of mine. And, you know, it wasn't ever just one of ours. We really did invite each other into each other's spaces. So what kind of started out of like, this is my chapter, that's your chapter, really everything became ours. And I think it's better for it.
And then we decided to add doula tips in. You know, like we started realizing like there's so many little tips that we've learned along the way that would make life so much easier if a new doula knew this. And so at in each chapter, we added a page of doula tips, which is just was just so much fun. It was a complete, I don't even know, maybe some I wouldn't even identify my own writing at this point in time, you know, because it was just all of us kind of coming together and putting our tips together that we'd gathered over the years, which I think it just turned out to be a really neat little extra bit in the workbook.
This is just such a great story because I'm a big believer that where we are right now as a whole movement around end of life issues, we need collaboration more than anything. And that the work that we can do together is so much greater than the work each one of us could do by ourselves. And you guys have proven that completely by coming together with this book. And it's such a beautiful thing to see, but also that three people with their own expertise who are highly skilled and working in their area could come together so smoothly and seamlessly. To create this, it's really inspiring. And I'd love to see more of that happen in other areas too.
One of the things that I've noticed in the comments and reviews that we get about the book are from people who say, your collaboration is so beautiful. They can see that clearly there are different topics throughout the book. And yet it feels like it was all one person, right? But it wasn't. It was three of us, and we created this beautiful thing. And people see that. They see it as a collaboration. They see it as three women who have done this work, who generously share their tools and secrets too. Like part of like publishing this book and putting it out there was making a sort of making peace with knowing that we're giving our secrets out. And that's what we've done in this book. We've put our secrets, our things that we do privately, and people are seeing that. They don't say, hey, Gabby, this is a great book. They say, you guys made this beautiful book, and they see it as a collaboration. There is no, if you look at it, like Angela said, if you look at it, you can't really tell whose is whose, except for maybe the pet part, because that's clearly Angela. But yeah, we worked so well together that it just flows and it blends all of our good parts in a really lovely way. Mm-hmm. And people see that. Most of the reviews are about the collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
That's and the really generosity. Nice. People are very thankful that we were so generous with our information.
Yeah, definitely, I'm sure. Well, you mentioned Angela's part, which I'm really interested to hear about what you've contributed about being a companion animal doula, because I will admit, like, I still get tears in my eyes when I think about our family dog who got euthanized. Oh my gosh, it's been years ago now, and yet I still have pain over how that happened and unfolded. And so I could have used a doula to help us through that. So I'm curious, just share with us kind of what you contributed and what's in the book.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite things that came out of the book was the three of us agreed on a definition for a doula. And it really applies to humans and animals. But the definition that we came up with was a trained non-medical professional of extraordinary compassion and kindness who brings emotional, practical, and unbiased support and expertise for those nearing death. Also known as end-of-life doulas, these caring professionals are often called upon to provide comfort, calm, and education for the dying person and their loved ones. And we all know there's a lot more that goes into being a doula, but the three of us really feel this is the meaning, the hard work behind it. And because our pets mean so much to us, you know, like you said, their deaths can be just emotionally devastating. And just like an end-of-life doula who serves humans nearing death and those who love them, there's space for someone to serve as that companion animal doula to provide that same comfort and support. I think it's incredibly helpful to have somebody just be present with you. With pet loss, sometimes I think it's still looked at a little disenfranchised grief to an extent. You know, you might hear, oh, it's just a dog. You can get another one. At least they're not in pain anymore. And that doesn't acknowledge the bond, the sacred loving bond that you have with an animal. So just by having somebody there during this journey that recognizes how much you love them and how much you are going to miss them and all the anticipatory grief and pain that goes along with it, I think that's a really special spot to be able to help support people. You know, within the role, I do a lot of very similar things that I do with my human clients. Some differences, of course, but I assist by helping assess the quality of life and working with the veterinarian team and creating and supporting a palliative and end-of-life care plan, providing resources. A lot of times the families I work with just don't realize how many resources are available for grief or for helping to make their homes you know, accommodable for their animals during different stages of mobility. I really enjoy helping prepare families and children for what to expect. So many times the death of an animal or the death of a pet is the first time kids are experiencing a large loss. And sometimes families struggle with how to share that with their child and help prepare them. So I like being part of that aspect too. I often companion during the euthanasia appointment and other care appointments, assisting with the death care and like after death care, even helping with burials and cremation, transportating the body. I love doing memorial and legacy work with them and providing that grief support for as long as needed. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but I am seeing so many more veterinarians and animal clinics providing more enhanced end-of-life care for their patients and clients. And even in the course I teach for UVM, the companion animal course, we're seeing a lot more vet med professionals taking that class and just really, really engaging in it. And I'm really hopeful that someday soon, it'll kind of be the golden standard for all veterinary clinics to have a doula as part of their care train. And, you know, there's also such a huge need to help doula and companion those vet med professionals themselves. I know I mentioned it kind of briefly in my introduction, but there's such that deep level of compassion, fatigue, and depression that happens in this field. And there's actually even a higher likelihood of death by suicide among veterinary medical professionals than the general population. And I think it's 5 times more for men and maybe about 2 to 3 times more likely for females in this field.
Wow.
So yeah, it's really quite devastating. And the more I've worked in this field and worked with veterinarians and shelter employees, you really see it. Because when I do offer support and compassion to those in the field, you just see how incredibly needed it is, how sadly and like sorely lacking it is in most cases. I really feel like one of the most important aspects of working with my mobile vet has been holding space for her. You know, sharing in the grief and emotional exhaustion that she experiences, and kind of taking that time to help her process all of her own feelings after each of our appointments. So it's like with being a doula, you know, we help those who are dying, we help their families and their loved ones and their friends and their circle. And it's that way too with companion animals. But I do think there's that third prong of also trying to hold space and supporting those that are in the veterinary profession as well.
That's such a good point that you make that, you know, I hadn't thought of before, but the veterinarian's grief is a type of disenfranchised grief too, that nobody expects it or thinks about it even, that, oh, that this would have an impact on the veterinarian. And then I love that you said when a family companion animal dies, that's often the child's first exposure to death and the family's first experience handling death together. And what a great way to prepare this family for all the conversations they'll need to have later on. And for, you know, you're introducing them to death in a, that it can be beautiful and compassionate. And so you're already overcoming a lot of the obstacles and the fears that might be there for those future conversations. And that's really valuable.
It is so valuable. You know, I think I had an experience just a couple of weeks ago, and the family had two young girls and they had a lot of questions. They were really curious. And I've seen this before with kids at these appointments who they're so curious about us that they kind of forget that there's the animal, that we're there for the animal. And I've actually started even carrying like a toy doctor's kit because sometimes they want to listen to the heart too, and they want to be helpers. And so this one little girl, she was only about four, and I always bring tissues with me. And I said, I'm going to put you in charge of this. Can you take a job? And she's like, yeah, she was really excited to have a job. And I said, so, okay, you know, we might feel sad, and it's okay to feel sad. And you might see mom and dad cry, and that's okay, because we're sad because we're losing our friend here. So if you see anybody with tears, I want you to hand off the tissue. Okay, I can do that. And she seemed really understanding of that. I really thought it was great that I saw her comforting her parents. It's okay, Dad, I have a tissue for you. But I think that with her sister and her, it did. I'm hoping, I really hope that this was the foundation for maybe death not being quite as scary or as mysterious as they grow up, you know, that maybe this will affect them in a positive way, to see death as not so scary, as part of life, and a time to share love and compassion and hold your family tight at that moment instead of something to fear.
Okay, the toy doctor kit, that's a brilliant idea to have when there's a child in the home, to let them feel, I mean, when we're going to visit human patients as well, to let them feel involved and less afraid of what we're doing as practitioners. That's a really brilliant idea. Well, Diane, I wanted to ask you again, like, this book, it seems it's such a valuable resource, and it seems interesting that as far as I know, there's nothing else like it. And just curious about how come no one's ever done this before?
Yeah. Well, I think the short answer is that this is still a really new field in so many ways. I mean, if you think about it, you know, as doulas being companions for the dying, doulas have been around for thousands of years. But I feel like as a profession, it's just really becoming more and more mainstream, and people are starting to understand that we exist and we're here to serve the dying. I think a lot of it has to do with more transient world that we're living in, and people's maybe support system isn't close by. And I also think COVID really kind of cracked the egg open a little bit, because people started talking more about mortality and death and dying, even the younger generation, which was super amazing, but it is still all relatively new. So resources really are scarce. And, you know, when we talking back about that first conversation with Angela and Gabby and me, we realized that, you know, wow, there really isn't anything. And aside from that, we are not we're not regulated, right? So we don't have a certain standard that we have to fit into to be a doula. And there's a lot of different trainings out there. And some trainings focus more on vigil and legacy. And another one might focus more on advanced directives, and more, some are many now are more holistic, which is wonderful. But, you know, we were thinking about it in a way of like, where can you go and find the answers to all the questions that were asked all the time? It doesn't answer every single thing, because we don't really talk too much about advanced directives in there. But aside from that, just about every question that the three of us are asked on a regular basis is responded to in that book. To us, it would really be beautiful if there was more consistency in the field. And so that was like part of our motivation, just noticing the lack of resources out there. So we hope, I'm sure we won't be the last, but I'm grateful that we were able to put this together. And I hope, you know, it reaches a lot of people and really makes a difference to new doulas and already working doulas who might not, you know, have ever put a vigil plan together, or might need some ideas for legacy work, or might need some ideas for ritual and ceremony, or maybe just want to get into being a pet doula. I mean, there's just lots of tools, hopefully, for everybody in there.
Yeah, and Angela, as a newer doula, I wanted to ask you how you feel this book, is this something that you might have wished you had over the last few years as you've started your doula practice?
Oh, absolutely. I can't tell you how many times during this book I thought, oh, I wish I would have had this at the beginning. I think that's where the book is going to be so helpful. I think it's going to help build confidence for those who, you know, provide end-of-life support, whether professionally or personally. You know, the toolkit provides really tangible tools and best practices, that some of them that can only be learned through experience. So for new doulas, it can help relieve the stress of getting started. I think it was mentioned earlier, but I know for sure when I finished my training, I was left feeling like, now what? Like, what do I do? How do I take all this information and this passion I have and actually develop it into my own community and into a job? For me, like I've mentioned before, the existing community and like really supportive doula community that's out there, like NIDA and other online platforms, really helped me in the beginning. I felt very intimidated. How do I even get started? I didn't have a business background. I have never started my own business before. I had no idea how to even start an intake form or a contract. And those were the things, those agreements, the documentation that was really the intimidating part to me, was how do I even get started? So I'm hoping that, you know, just by having those forms as a starting point, that people can kind of overcome that insecurity and approach this with a little bit more confidence. They can take those as starting points and then customize them to what they want to do, their skill sets, but at least it's a starting point. Those kinds of tips and tidbits that I learned from other doulas along the way were what were so valuable to me. And I really hope that this book kind of represents and models that community of doulas that we have. And like Diane says, kind of provides that centralized location for that practical information, instead of having to kind of piece it together like we did when we were getting started. And I've seen too, you know, for just lay people and family caregivers, I think they can get the benefit of all of our combined years of experience to help kind of guide them. In a lot of the chapters, we share a story that from the experiences that we've had that could be most helpful to them. And to see how we put those tips and skills into like real world practice in a way that's accessible and heartfelt, I think can be comforting to those who might be in relatable situations. A friend of mine recently read the book, and she's been caring for her mother during the last few months of her life as she's very quickly declining. And she shared that even just having some of the knowledge from the book helped her to ask better questions and to be a stronger advocate for her mom's care. So I'm hoping that the book kind of just mostly conveys that anyone can support somebody that they love at end of life. You don't have to be a professional to care for somebody you love at the end of life. That showing up fully present and with compassion is what's needed. They don't have to be an expert. It's okay not to know everything. Mm-hmm. And hopefully our book can be like a safe and reliable resource for them to show up with more confidence and a little bit more information than what they had before.
And Gabby, as a hospice nurse, I'm wondering, do you think this book could be valuable to the hospice staff as well?
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the things that I would like to see happen with this book is that it encourages people to be a part of a community. You know, we're not a solo act. We're not doing this work on our own. We really are a part of a community. And I think that goes for anyone who works in hospice as well. And if you think of all the members of the hospice team, there are parts of this book that would benefit all of them. Whether it's the stories that we share, whether it is the forms or intake, even in the intake forms, the questions, right? The questions that we've put in these forms, that would inspire anyone who does this work to maybe have a guideline of what conversations you can have with a person who is dying and those who are preparing to say goodbye. I think this book was, you know, it's the doula toolkit. It's for doulas. What it is for caregivers of anyone who is providing end-of-life care support to someone who is dying. So yes, I think the hospice team can benefit. I think that we get so busy. I mean, our case managers currently have, you know, 18 or 20 patients. That's a lot on their plate. And I think it's very easy to just see it sort of robotically. Okay, I got to see this patient. We need to be reminded that this is a human being. This human being is dying and people are preparing to say goodbye. That when we walk into their home, we need to take a moment and pause and really face what is happening for them. And I think this book and the way that we wrote it really reminds people why we're doing this work, that it's not just a job. It's not about the paycheck, that people are dying. And we could be the difference between pain and peaceful. We could be the difference between fear and uncertainty to a calming presence of comfort. And I think that this book really would affect and support and comfort anyone who is preparing to support someone who is dying.
That's really beautiful. And Dan, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Well, I'm just listening to Gabby. It's so beautiful hearing her talk about that, because for me, you know, thinking about like what parts of the book really were the most meaningful to me and such, you know, I realized that just listening to Gabby, like when we first started this, I was really excited about sort of, I can't really think of the right word, but like the office procedural part about it, you know, like the getting your doula business up and running. And that sounded like a really cool thing that people needed, like what next after I take my course. But like just listening to Gabby and her talking about like the stories. So we did all these forms, we did all these templates, and it was great, like at page 75, but page 75 to 200 is our heart. You know, that's where we just like unzipped our hearts and let everything out. And it was like, I think I'm, it kind of gives me chills a little bit, but I think like the book started with this beautiful kind of framework of like logical, progressive things to do to get your doula practice going. But then when we really did add those stories, and that's where we kind of jumped in on each other's sections a lot too, and our hearts just kind of all started weaving together in such a cool way. It felt like it really just became beautiful at that point.
This book is personal.
Yeah.
You know, yes, we did create something that we want to hand over to others. But the truth of the matter is this is our diary. You know, it's the steps we took to get where we are now, reminding others that you don't know it all. Just because we have this combined experience doesn't mean we know it all. We're still learning too. But as we wrote this book and we created this beautiful gift, which I think it is, it was a reminder to me that this is personal. Everything in this book is personal. And what we do is personal. And we do, the three of us come from such a heart-centered place. And it's about creating something. It's about doing something beautiful, which we all feel like we have done. But it's also about inspiration. Like, how can we get others to feel about what they're doing the way we do? It's personal. And like I mentioned earlier, we hand over our secrets. I mean, that in itself should tell you how badly we wanted to do this, that we are willing to divulge things that we have not told anyone. I've held classes, my ritual classes, where afterwards people will say, can we get a copy of your ritual? No, no, I don't share that with anyone. That book has my rituals. It was hard, you know, and I keep repeating myself here, but it is personal. That book, when you read it, you are going to feel our passion, our hearts, this friendship that has been built, this love of what we do, and the reminder that when a human being is taking their last breath, they deserve to be treated with grace and kindness and to have that last breath be peaceful. How can we do that? Well, we have to do it by coming together. So my goal with this book is that it builds the community.
I love that. And I feel it, how important that is, and that needs to be the goal for all of us in our work. It's not about our own individual business. It's about how can we come together to serve the community. And if anything is threatening hospice right now, it's that it's been taken over by an attitude of competition, that we compete with other hospices and therefore we're willing to do certain things as competitors that you would never do if you're collaborators and if you're caring about the community first. And so it just makes me so happy that you guys are role modeling for all of us. Like, remember, we need to work together. It's about the community.
Well, and you know, when someone is dying, that's the only time they will ever do that, right? They're not going to get a do-over. You can't say, gosh, you know, I really wish I'd said something different or I'd done something different. You only get one chance at that. And I do think that we have to up our game, just in general, as human beings offering this care. We have to do better. It can't be about the money. I get it. You know, you're a business. You got to make money. I understand all that. But at the end of the day, we have to find a way to balance it all out so that compassion and kindness for others is not tossed aside as less important. This work is heart-centered, and it should stay that way no matter what. Whether you're a profit or nonprofit hospice, if you're going to provide this care, you have to come from this place.
So true. And Angela, you may have answered this already, but I don't know if you have a favorite part of the book, something near and dear to your heart. I mean, besides the parts you wrote.
Yeah, other than just writing it with these two amazing people, I mean, that was fun. The doula tips, I really love those. I think Gabby had mentioned another time that, you know, if somebody picked up the book just for the doula tips, I think they would find value in this book. But for me, the favorite parts go back to the stories that are shared.
Yeah.
It's just such a great way of not just teaching and sharing experiences and best practices. It's illustrating them in a way that's meaningful and real and memorable. And the stories, I think, are really what makes this book a special gift.
And then I'll just ask all three of you, or anybody can answer. Did you learn anything about each other going through this process together? I mean, you started out knowing each other somewhat, but probably not being nearly as close as you are now.
Well, I'll start because I didn't know Angela. I had never even really talked to her. I'd seen her on social media and I knew who she was, but I didn't know anything about her work with the animals. I didn't know anything about her. So this was very new. And yeah, I think I learned something from both of them. And first of all, we built a friendship that's never going to go away. Like, this is a bond. But excuse me, I'm getting a little choked up and emotional. Diane had a couple of her tips in there that I was like, wait, why didn't I ever think about that? Like the things in her doula bag. I don't actually carry a bag. I just have a trunk. I'm like the MacGyver of nurses, right? Because I have all my stuff in there, whatever I might
duct
need.
Duct tape. And,
oh, right? Yeah. I have a bathing bowl. I've got frankincense and myrrh. I've got candles. I've got thread for one of the rituals, which is outlined in the book. But I loved all the things that she has in her doula bag. And I thought, okay, well, I clearly need to do better. And I loved what Angela wrote about the animals. I thought that was touching. I'm actually seriously thinking about finding a way to maybe incorporate that in my work. But what I really, she did a ritual in there and it was so beautiful. I asked her if I can share it in my ritual classes because it was something I hadn't thought of yet. And I think that, like I said earlier, and I can't speak for these two, but they're probably going to say the same. I think we are better doulas because of the conversations that we had that helped put this book together. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about them and about this work and the reminder that we, again, are not a solo act, but also that we don't know it all. I don't know it all. And sometimes I think I forget that. And we needed, you know, it's a humbling experience to be with two other people who do this work well and who have done it for a long time, that we are constantly learning. And that's the beautiful thing.
For you, Diane, did you learn anything new about these two just through the process of writing a book together?
Yeah. So I knew them both. And I was already just wanted them to be my next door neighbors, you know? And so I knew that it was, I had a really, really solid feeling that we were going to work really, really well together. And what was really sweet was, you know, Angela had never written anything quite like this before. And so she felt a little bit intimidated by Gabby, especially, who can write faster than she can speak. And she showed up and Angela's like, all right, I'm all in. So like the spirit of like, yes, we can do this was just so fun and awesome. And just watching everybody kind of rise up. But I really learned that we're way more similar than we are different. I mean, we do things differently. But just in terms of our doula hearts and what matters and showing up and the fact that we really do care about kind of bringing people together and raising the skill set in the doula community, I really felt their hearts through this all. And so I just love them both even more than I did when we started. It's just been awesome.
That's awesome. And for you, Angela, I don't know, anything yeah. new you learned about?
You know, like Diane said, we've known each other for a few years, and I've counted on her as a mentor for a long time and as a dear friend, a very special friend. Diane actually officiated my wedding last year, so we've had a special bond, and I really long admired Gabby. I had been a social media follower and a fan of her books, and well before Diane introduced us. In fact, I think that our first Zoom call, I was trying to be cool because I had kind of the fangirl excitement going on because I thought so much of Gabby. And you know, I already knew that they both were excellent writers and really compassionate doulas. But doing this project together, I also learned what amazing coaches they are. Because Diane's right, I was more than a bit intimidated writing with two such amazing and already published authors. But they both offered me so much support and guidance along the way. They gave me excellent feedback and helped me improve my writing, boosted my confidence when I needed it, really challenged me to push past my comfort zone. And, you know, they constantly inspire me. They inspired me before this book. They inspired me all the way through it, and they will always continue to do so. And I'm very grateful.
That's fantastic to hear. And I hope this conversation gives other people out there the courage to try collaborating, like find your people. Who do you resonate with? Who's out there that you feel like, I want that person to be my neighbor, but we could also do something amazing together if we just put our hearts together and bring our knowledge and expertise. And so I'd love for this conversation to maybe inspire other people to do something, anything in their community to make a difference. So all four of us are talking about your book, The Doula Toolkit, right? I'll show it again. The Doula Toolkit. And Gabby, tell everyone where they can get the book.
You can get the book on Amazon. It's The Doula Toolkit. It's right now, it's got 5 stars. It's getting really great reviews. And Angela has gotten, I think, one or two stores in where she lives. And I'm working on a couple stores here where I live. So I have a feeling you're going to see it locally in stores as well and many neighborhoods. But for right now, the main location is Amazon.
So I encourage everyone to buy it. It sounds like it's a great resource to just have on your shelf if you're a doula, but also if you're working in this field at all, just for the tips and the other information in the book. So I want to thank you, all three of you, Diane, Angela, and Gabby, for joining me today to talk about the book. It's just fabulous. Like, I'm kind of envious. I wish I could be part of your group. but I got
you
to
are a part of our group.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with the book, and I hope you sell lots of copies, because I think it's something really important that should be out there in the world.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Gabby, Angela, and Diane about their new book, The Doula Toolkit. And I'm really excited about it. I think it's wonderful that they came together and collaborated, because that's one thing I keep talking about. And it's actually one of the things I'm trying to create with this podcast, is a networking hub where you can learn about other people who are doing similar work to you, connect with them, and perhaps work together on a special project. And the Doula Toolkit is one of those special projects that's going to make such a big difference out there for everyone who's received doula training. It's really a phenomenal resource, but also for caregivers and lay people who want to know more about caring for someone at the end of life. So I'm excited about the idea that these three ladies came together. They had a wonderful time creating this book together, and I would love to see more collaborative projects like this happening. So as I said before, that's actually one of my goals for this podcast, is to introduce you to people from all over the world who are doing interesting work, in hopes that you'll meet someone who seems just right as a collaborator for you. So stay tuned, keep listening in, and even if it's a topic that at first you think may not interest you, take a listen, because you might find out you have something in common with the person I interview. So I really encourage you to do that. Also, please, if you enjoy this content, you probably know someone else who would benefit from listening as well. So be sure and spread the word about End of Life University. Show them how to subscribe. And if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe and leave a rating and a review for the podcast wherever you happen to listen. That's really helpful. Remember that I have a YouTube channel also called End of Life University. If you would like to watch the videos of these interviews that take place. And again, as I said earlier, my Patreon community will be able to watch some bonus scenes from some of the interviews I do, probably not everyone, but from time to time, there'll be some little bonuses. And this interview today has a bonus interview on Patreon that I'm excited to share. And if you'd like to make a contribution to the podcast, but you're not necessarily ready to sign up on Patreon, if you go to eoluniversity.com/support, you'll find a couple of other options for making a donation through PayPal or by buying me a coffee. So thanks in advance for everyone who chooses to do that, and for all of you who've been supporting the podcast for years now. I appreciate you so much. It means everything to me. So until next week, when we're together again, and I'll be sharing an interview with you then with Johanna Lunn of the When You Die Project, and we're talking about the documentary films that When You Die has created, and you'll really enjoy that conversation, I guarantee it. So be sure and come back. But remember until then that we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of your very precious life. Bye-bye.